Welcome again to our podcast series, Stories of Faithfulness. This is David Felker, the Minister of Discipleship here at First Presbyterian Church in Jackson, and thank you for joining us. Our guest this week is a dear friend of mine from seminary who is also one of our missionaries, Aaron Halpert. Aaron is a missionary kid. He was born in Honduras, and he lived there until he was 10 years old, and then he moved to Tennessee. But his wife, Rachel Hutton, has many connections to First Pres. She grew up not far from here in the Mississippi Delta and grew up at Shula Presbyterian Church. Aaron did seminary at RTS Jackson while he was on staff at Second Presbyterian Church in Yazoo City. And upon completion of RTS in 2013, the Halperts moved back to Honduras to start a new missions team with MTW in the capital city of Honduras, Tegucigalpa. And it has strengthened my heart all these years to see the work that the Lord has done in Aaron and through Aaron in Honduras to point so many to the breadth, the length, the height, and the depth of the love of Jesus Christ. And I can't wait for you to hear his story. Welcome, Aaron.
Thank you, David. It has really been an encouragement to my soul to do kind of this looking back over what the Lord's done in my life and in the life of my family over many years. And one of the things that's been, I need to preface this with, is anybody who knows me is that I am a weepy guy. And even in prepping this and just even thinking about going through this, I already have tears in my eyes. Mainly because it's good for me and overwhelming at times to look back and truly see the goodness of God. I think I do it regularly, but I don't know that I do it regularly enough. Over the last about 8 weeks, 10 weeks, maybe 12 now, I don't know, since we've been in quarantine, we've been preaching through Ezra and Nehemiah, and I've been just yesterday preached Ezra chapter 9, and Ezra is recounting the sins of the people, is overcome by the sins of the people. And Ralph Davis says, you know, you get chapters 1 through 6 that are a reminder that God's people had enemies, and then chapters 9 and 10 are a reminder that God's people love their own sin and idolatry more than they love God. And yet, all through chapter 9, you're reminded that there is a remnant. And so what you see is a faithful God, a God that is determined to save and love his people. And so that, for me, is a God of faithfulness. And what we're talking about is stories of faithfulness. And so I'm currently sitting in Tegucigalpa, Honduras, not far from where I was born and raised, and thinking about my childhood. I grew up in a covenant home. I grew up with parents who were missionaries here for 13 years, and often talk to us about the gospel. Both my brothers now are missionaries overseas, and in God's kindness, all of us know the Lord and are believers. And I don't think that's anything that my parents did. I think it's just the faithfulness of the Lord and the kindness of the Lord in calling us and electing us and bringing us unto salvation. But I can remember being a kid, and probably from the age of 6 on, when I think that I became a Christian, maybe. I don't remember a time that I didn't know the Lord. But I can remember praying for years and years, every night before I went to bed. The last thing I would say is, Lord, if I don't know you, if I'm not saved, save me. Because I was scared to death of going to hell. I was scared of separation from family and from the Lord and what all that meant. Probably brought about because my older brothers took it upon themselves to evangelize me when I was 4 or 5 years old. We were standing at the runway in Sihuatepeque, Honduras, and my brothers, in essence, just told me, you know, Aaron, if you were to die today, you'd go to hell and you'd never see mom and dad again. Talk about scaring a 4-year-old to death. It overwhelmed me. And that, I don't know if that's when the Lord began to work, but I was scared to death. But it wasn't until probably sixth grade, I was 12 years old, and in Sunday school class, we were learning about the glory of heaven. And the first time I began, I think, to long for heaven more than I was scared of hell. The desire to see and be with Christ. And there was a switch, and I think in God's kindness that happened. Yes, we should fear hell. We don't want hell. But at the same time, the glory of heaven is Christ. And that was the beginning of when there was much more desire to go to heaven than fear of hell. And just the way that my Sunday school teacher invested in us and pointed us to that Christ is the glory of heaven, and that we should long to be with Christ, was a real changing moment in my life. And the beginning of a process from that point on of a desire to serve the Lord. And I knew that I, at some level, wanted to do something. I loved serving in the church. I loved being involved. And so it was the beginning of the process of talking to my parents about what it would look like. And so went through high school, some difficult years there, transitioning back into the States from Honduras, and difficulties of being a third culture kid and that kind of stuff. But in God's kindness, I was given great friends during those seasons, and then moved off to college. And during college, was set up on a blind date. And as I think through Ebenezer stones in my life, I think of the fact that my wife's roommate just decided that I was the person that should go on a blind date with my now bride, which I've said multiple times, about the only way I was going to get a date was a blind date. And so my wife was at Mississippi State, and I was at Middle Tennessee State University studying. And my plan was, I was studying history so that I could move back here to Honduras to teach school. And my wife's roommate said, you know, this girl wants to come up, and she wants to come to Nashville and see Nashville, but she doesn't want to be a third wheel. Her roommate was dating one of my friends from RUF. And so I got her number and I called her. And in our first conversation, we talked for about an hour or so. And in that conversation, my wife told me, well, at the time, this girl that I was talking to, Rachel Hutton, from Chula, Mississippi, was telling me, yeah, I just want to graduate college and be a missionary. That's what I want to do. So, you know, I'm checking off boxes. Okay, this girl's a believer. She attends RUF. She's a Presbyterian. She wants to be a teacher and a missionary, and she hasn't seen me yet. I need to lock this down as quickly as possible. And so we dated 2 years, and in God's kind providence, we're married after 2 years, and 6 months later moved here to Honduras to teach school. And I look back at the kindness of God, in the fact that through RUF, through friendships, through random things, the Lord was setting my wife and I on a trajectory that we could have never even dreamed or imagined. Isn't that the truth of God's faithfulness, right? That oftentimes we look and think, oh, this is what's going to happen, and here's how it's going to go. And we get to look back and say, wow, somebody just handing me a phone number drastically changed my life. And so my wife and I married and moved here to Honduras and taught school. But right before we moved here, my sister-in-law, Catherine, was diagnosed with liver cancer and died our first year here teaching school. And the plan after Honduras was to go to seminary, and we were looking at Charlotte, and looking at Charlotte because we wanted to kind of be at a place where I had a few more connections there. I grew up after living in Honduras in Knoxville, and so there was an idea of being back close to my parents. But when Rachel's sister died, we realized that long term we were probably going to live overseas. And Rachel's mom and dad are from the Delta and were born and raised in the Delta, and so we knew we weren't going to have opportunity to live close anytime in the future. And so the decision was made to go to RTS in Jackson. And we were, and looking back, all these things fell into place that all the things that come after it wouldn't have happened the same way, and would have been very different. Would the Lord been faithful if different decisions had been made? The Lord is always faithful. But looking back and seeing God's goodness and taking us to Jackson, you know, Sam Taft just did one of these, and Sam's one of my dearest friends. David Felker asked me to do this. One of my dearest friends, Corey Brock. I wouldn't have met any of these folks who are people who have been great encouragement to me and to our ministry here in Honduras if we hadn't ended up in Jackson. And so Catherine's death, though difficult, with her dying at such a young age, brought us to Yazoo City, Mississippi, where I served as an intern at Second Perez for 4 years. 5 years we were at the church until we moved here to Honduras. And during that time, there was a lot of change. And one of the things that we were hoping to do during seminary was see our family grow. And for whatever reason, though we don't completely understand, when we were looking at, when we were dating, we had talked about the fact that we always wanted to adopt. It was one of the things that kind of brought us together. We were wanting to do adoption from the beginning of our marriage, right? We were looking at marriage, talking about the fact of how the Lord would build our family. And one of the things we talked about very early on was adoption. And then as we were going through seminary, we decided that we wanted to start our family. And one of the things that we had going on is that we were having trouble getting pregnant and having some infertility issues. And so one of the things that my wife and I talked about is, well, we've always wanted to adopt, so why don't we just open both doors, right? Why don't we say, let's try to get pregnant and let's also try to adopt and see which the Lord brings first. And there were, to be honest, there were a lot of dark nights of the soul during that time, because not only were we not getting pregnant, in November of 2012, we were selected by a birth mom, met with her, and the day the baby was born, I was putting the car seat in the car, and the social worker called and said, listen, she's changed her mind. And that, for my wife and I, was very shaking and difficult and trying. And I can remember walking in, and we sat on the couch and wept together. And in God's infinite kindness, we were just talking about the fact of, what if our family never grows? And I remember asking my wife, just honestly, for the both of us, will the Lord be enough if it's just always the two of us? And that was one of those questions that really challenged both of us to think through in our own hearts. That's not a truth for everybody. I'm not saying that people who want kids don't think the Lord's enough. No, it was just a reality that after heartbreak and more heartbreak, if the Lord and his infinite wisdom never saw fit to give us kids, would it change our God? And I think for the next few months, it was that way. We were wrestling with those realities. And one of the things that came true to me is I was prepping to preach sermons in Psalms, the last of the Davidic Psalms. Psalm 138 has been one of my favorite Psalms since that season, because in Psalm 138, verse 3, the psalmist says, he's talking about God's faithfulness in verse 2, his hesed love, this dogged, determined, faithful love. And then he says, on the day I called, you answered me, my strength of soul you increased. And he doesn't say, on the day I called to you, you answered me and you got me out of the situation. No, on the day I called, you answered me, my strength of soul you increased, as in you sustained me. You were my comfort and my rock and my refuge and my strength. You strengthened my soul. Not you gave me all that I wanted. And that was a very encouraging reality. That the Lord, whatever came, whatever comes to pass, he would be our comfort. And so that was a trying time. I actually preached that sermon the Sunday after, which I didn't know at the time this is how it would fall. I preached that sermon the Sunday after our first son, Ford, came home. And in our first adoption, he came home at 8 days old, the 16th of March, 2013. And I preached it on March 17th, 2013. And seeing God's goodness in that, not that that's how it works out for everybody, but that the Lord, during that season of a lot of darkness, reminded me that he was strengthening, reminded us that he was strengthening our souls, that he was our all in all. And then quickly after that, the Lord added another child to our family through adoption, and Catherine was brought home 14 months later. And she came, we were at the hospital when she was born and came home. And so we had Ford and Kat, and then moved back to Honduras. And I'm going to kind of dig in here. I know this has already been a little bit long, but this is kind of where I'm going to dig in and close. We moved back to Honduras in 2015 after support raising. And in 2015, we moved to the town, the first town I grew up in, Siguatepeque. And during that time, my wife and I had talked about the idea of growing our family more. And we hadn't still hadn't been able to conceive naturally. And there were no reasons why. We'd been to the doctor. We had asked many questions. And in God's providence, we hadn't gotten pregnant. And so during the support raising process, we had gotten to know a family who had done embryo adoption. And so we began to go down that road and pursue it. We had just moved to Honduras, and every 3 months until the visas were approved, we had to leave the country by two countries for 72 hours. And so the first time we left, we came back to pursue embryo adoption, do some testing, see if that would be an option. And in God's infinite wisdom, as I've said multiple times, in his faithfulness, we were approved for embryo adoption. And they talked to us about all the numbers and what would have to happen. And so we started the whole process. And in September of 2015, my wife had two embryos implanted in her. And in having those two embryos implanted in her, we made the decision for two because they talked to us about numbers and chances of getting pregnant and all that kind of stuff. And so we implanted two, praying that both would take, because every embryo is a life. And so we prayed that we would have twins. And, you know, my wife being my wife and thinking about numbers and odds, said, you know, Aaron, they did say that if we plant two, there's, you know, a one in whatever million people chance that we'll have triplets. And I'm an eternal optimist, usually. And so I was like, babe, if we have triplets, we'll be okay. We'll make it. It'll be fine. About 11 weeks later, we went to the hospital here in Honduras, and the doctor kind of began to ask questions of my wife, like, are you sure they planted two? And she had been worried that she'd lost the embryos, the pregnancy, and so she began to ask questions and get worried when the doctor was asking how many embryos. And then he said, well, because I'm seeing three heartbeats. And as I've already mentioned, I'm a weepy guy. I just started crying. My wife just started crying. Ford and Catherine, at this point, Ford was three. No. Yes, Ford was three. Catherine was one. No. Yeah. I'm sorry that I'm blanking on these numbers. I'm thinking about how old Ford was. Ford was two and a half when this happened. Was going to turn three. Because when the triplets were born, yeah, Ford had just turned. Yeah, had just turned three. So he was two and Catherine was one when this happened. And so we found out there were triplets. And that meant that my wife was going to give birth to triplets, and we planned to do it here, and then it ended up having to do it in the States by recommendation of doctors. And so all that to say, I'm fast forwarding to a lot of things that have happened, but in the year 2016, the girls were born in April. They were in the NICU for a few weeks, and then they came home. We came to Mississippi. I baptized them at Second Perez in Yazoo City. And then we moved back here to Tegucigalpa with five kids, three and under, with a little help, some help from two girls from the States who came down with us to give us their summers so that they could be with us. And in September, October of that year, my wife and I both contracted Zika. All the kids got respiratory illnesses, and the triplets were losing weight at about 5 months old, and we were overwhelmed. At this point, we had no help. Everybody who had come to help us had moved back to the States, and we were hanging on by a thread. We were listening to a Derek Thomas sermon, and I remember it ended, and my wife looked at me and said, I can't keep going. I'm drowning. And so this is why I dig in here, because what I was struggling with is I'm a guy that always says it's going to work out. It'll all be okay. It'll be fine. And what happened is that in this idea was I was struggling with the fact we had moved back to Honduras. We had been there for a year plus. We hadn't started a church plant yet. We had learned Spanish, we had added triplets, but it felt like as far as ministry went, as far as being successful, if I can put it that way, goes, nothing had happened. And here we were both sick and having to go back to the States again because we needed support and we needed to be cared for. And what became true through that, through the birth of the triplets, and the struggles, the sickness, the no church, sin in my own life of people pleasing and all these kind of things. The Lord was burning the dross off. The Lord was being faithful. And I remember reading in Voyage of the Dawn Treader when Eustace has become the dragon and he puts the golden ring on his arm and it's causing him pain. And he has his encounter with Aslan and he gets in the well and he tries to take off the dragon scales. And he does it once, twice, three times, and it doesn't work. And then Aslan says to him, no, you know, I've got to do that. And he says in the book, and it hurt like nothing I had ever felt before. And I thought, it says the very first tear he made was so deep that I thought it had gone right into my heart. And he said, well, he peeled the beastly stuff off just as I thought I'd done myself the other three times, only they hadn't hurt. And there it was lying on the grass, only ever so much thicker and darker and more knobbly looking than the others had been. And thinking about sin in that way, oftentimes I think, I've got to do this. I got to take care of this. It'll be okay. We'll work it out. And in October of 2016, it felt very much like the Lord was saying, Aaron, I've got to do this. And it was a hard season, one of the harder seasons, if not the hardest at this point in my life. And if you remember in Voyage of the Dawn Treader that he then gets into the well and begins to swim. And he says, after that, it became delicious. And as soon as I started swimming and splashing, I found that all the pain had gone from my arm. And then I saw why. I'd turned into a boy again. And I think back on that reality of 2016, all the struggles and pains haven't gone away. There's been ups and downs and difficulties and that kind of stuff. But it was a season where the Lord was breaking me of myself, breaking me of my tendency to think that I could do it on my own, that we'd be okay, that just need to keep pressing through. And what the Lord was revealing and reminding me of was, Aaron, I'm more faithful to my church. I'm more faithful than you are. I am more faithful to your family than you are. You need to be faithful to them. But I am the faithful God. And sometimes I'm going to show you that through pain and through difficulty and through hurt. Because I do that because I love you. And I think that's the part that keeps coming back, why Psalm 138 has been so rich, is that during all of this, he continued to strengthen my soul. Because of who he is. That even though it seemed so difficult in these seasons, as I look back at certain things and the joys of certain Ebenezer stones and the difficulties of certain Ebenezer stones, our God, my God, hasn't changed. He's promised that he's going to finish the work he began in me. And yet at the same time, he's finishing that work, but yet he's a great high priest who sympathizes, who can see the pains and the difficulties and say, I know exactly how they feel. I know exactly those emotions that Aaron's going through. And so I hope that this has been an encouragement to you. To me, looking back over these things, seeing God's goodness and faithfulness has been a rich reminder of how often I tend towards sneaking back into that self-sufficiency and looking back and realizing, wow, bless the Lord. Bless the Lord, oh my soul, with all that is within me, because our God is good and our God is faithful. And I pray that's an encouragement to you today. Thanks again.